Welcome to the Dharma Talk. The title of the talk today is The Deathless. It's a rather difficult theme, and it was actually the theme that I took up for my very first Dharma talk many years ago. When Christopher heard the title, I thought he was going to fall through the floor with shock. He said he was terrified and worried for me, that I wouldn't be able to speak about such a theme. But this talk is his all-time favorite. So in a sense, I give it again in honor of him. Could we have a translation for deathless in Hebrew? Okay, thank you. Thank you. I wouldn't like to give a talk without you knowing at least what the title is. So essentially, the theme is the five powers of the mind, or the five spiritual faculties of the mind. So in the Pali Canon, which is the oldest authentic record that we have of what the Buddha taught, there's the following passage. There are five spiritual faculties. These are sometimes also called the five mental powers, that when maintained in being and develop, merge in the deathless, reach to the deathless, and end in the deathless. What five? They are the faculties of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and understanding, or insight or wisdom. So first of all, I'm going to endeavor to explain what the deathless is, what this term means, and then we'll take up each of the five powers of the mind. These powers in India are known of as the Indriyas, the gods of the mind, because they're what you use when you get in trouble, when life is difficult. These are the mental faculties that we take up to help us re-establish calm again and centeredness in our life. And they're what we need to know to cultivate and develop an understanding of the liberating truth of the Dharma. So if we cultivate these five things, it leads to the understanding of the deathless. And by deathless, we mean that which was never born and does not die, that which is utterly unformed, unfettered, it's bound nowhere. Another definition that the Buddha used was the deathless means liberation through non-clinging. So when we don't cling anywhere, what's revealed to us is that which is unborn and undying. This word was used, and it's not everybody's favorite word, but I actually love the term. It was used along with many others that the Buddha used as a synonym for nibbana or freedom or liberation. He also used words like the refuge, the island, the endless. There were so many different words. There's over 100 words that he used to describe freedom. But this is one of my favorites. So it's not something macabre. It's when he began to describe it, he said, "This is the peaceful, this is the exquisite." So it's actually to realize a dimension of peace and of beauty. And we've actually heard glimpses of this, even in the short retreat, the short time we've been together so far. In people's reports, both in the groups and up here and in the instructions, that we have the capacity in our heart and mind to see for ourselves, or at least get a taste or a glimpse or a whisper of what the Buddha is pointing to. And of course, many of you have profound and deep understandings of the Dharma. So we use the simplicity of our capacity to reflect. So to see into our experiences, to see the falsity of our own constructions, of our ideas, or the judgments that we form about ourselves and others. We see into them, and we see that very often what we put together to construct our fears, for example, isn't the truth of things. It's untrue. It's illogical. It's not the truth. Yet we somehow believe it of ourselves or of others, and we project into the future. Or we're rather critical now, either inwardly or outwardly. So when we start to let go, it shifts and changes our relationship to the whole of life and to all things. The deathless isn't in a far-off realm. It's not something that we can't know and understand directly. It's not in outer space somewhere. It's not like that. And of course, in the actualities of our life, there's many occasions where we can reflect rather deeply on what life's all about. And one of these occasions, of course, is with the death of somebody we love. And in 2001, which is a rather long time ago now, my father died. And his death inspired in me some deep reflection on the universal truth, of course, of impermanence, but also to look and see a little more deeply, if you like, or to see what this impermanence, when it's understood deeply, reveals. Because at such a time, what is equally evident is that which is immeasurable and unformed, that which is prior to birth, beyond death, and to be understood here and now. So one of the gifts that my father gave me was a gateway to this understanding. When I was a child, we lived on a farm, on a property. We had sheep, lots of sheep, thousands of sheep, and lots of land. I could walk to the horizon, almost. We could see to the horizon. And so my father and I would walk. And sometimes in the chill of the morning, we would walk and there would be ice in the puddles. And then he would just take me with him. I was only a small child. And he would point out to me the spider's web and the drop of dew on the spider's web. And then he'd take me and show me the spring that was bubbling up through the ground, the water that seemed to be coming endlessly. And he was a man of very few words. And so he would just show me these things, and he would be very silent, and he wouldn't say anything else. Yet at these times, he was utterly content, and time stood still. And so for me, on those walks, I had that beautiful experience of connectedness, of a sense of oneness with nature and with all things. This is really one of the openings or gateways, if you like, to seeing. It's not an experience of the deathless, an experience of interconnectedness. Is one thing, and then we need to go deeper and deeper and deeper. In the Heart Sutra, there's a line that describes this. Gate, gate, paragate. So gone, gone, gone beyond. Gone beyond any sense of identity. Gone beyond the personal. Gone beyond time itself. So this is the beginning of an awakening. It's an awakening experience. And many of us have had this experience. And we can see that, and then we can reflect and see what else is offered up when we really listen. Which is why we're in silence, because we can hear what is being said to us in the silence, by the silence. So for those of us who loved my father, of course, it was a difficult time. He was paralyzed on one side of his body. He couldn't swallow or even speak. And then finally he was incontinent and absolutely furious and in a complete rage about his loss of control. Yet this is the nature of this body and yours and mine. But even so, in his death was and is the deathless. So for me, you see, the Dharma is tried and true. We can look, we can see. We can see that which is shifting and changing and begins and ends, yet we can also have a sense of that which is beginningless and endless. And I'm not positing anything that's eternal, by the way. I'm not saying that there's part of my father that is eternal. So, another story. Not far from Australia, from Darwin, which is in the north of Australia, there's an island. It's called now Timor-Leste. And it used to be Portuguese Timor for half of the island and Indonesia for the other half. And in 1999, the Timorese people voted and had a vote for independence. And people walked for days to vote. And they voted to be independent from Indonesia. The Indonesian government was not very happy about this. And so what happened was not only did the military come, but lots of groups of young bandits, almost, you would call them, militias, some trained soldiers, some just young men with guns and machetes, came from the Indonesian side of the island into East Timor, and 300,000 people were killed. It was an extraordinary massacre. There was unspeakable horror and brutality. This is one-third of the population. One-third of the population died, but they stood for standing steady in their kind of right to vote. So that's the background for you. And so a couple of years later, I was there, and my partner at the time had a brief to set up a mental health program for the whole country. So you can imagine what a big task that was, following this terrible brutality that had occurred. But while I was there, I met some extraordinary people and I heard lots of stories of courage and heroism. And I went to an orphanage where some Indonesian nuns were in East Timor and looking after about 50 young children. There were just three nuns and 50 children. And in a very remote place, it took hours and hours and hours for us to drive there on a very rough road in a big four-wheel drive. And the orphanage itself was several kilometers from a town. Now, during this time, There'd been lots of killing and looting and all kinds of atrocities and violations. A church had been burned down. It's a Catholic country. And the nuns, of course, had heard that some of their sisters had been killed. And it was a terrible, terrible situation. And so there they were, these three women with 50 children. And so they waited and they prayed. They knew that somebody would come eventually. So it came. And these young men, Indonesian, said to the Indonesian nun, "Go back to Indonesia." But Sister Caroline, her name was, she held firm. She and the other nuns wouldn't abandon the children. They just absolutely refused to leave. It's really courageous. And the leader said, "We are military and we have orders." And the sister, the Catholic sister, said, "I have orders too." And she said, "I've not been told by the church to leave, and so I'm not leaving." And so, of course, after she persisted, these truckloads of men who were armed left. But they knew they'd come back. So again, they prayed and waited and kept the children safe. The next day, they came back. And Sister Caroline told me this story. It was extraordinary. She said they came. And again, they said, "I have orders. You have to leave." Or, "We have orders. You have to leave," to her. And so she said she stood there and she said, "I have orders too. And I take my orders from God, and I am not leaving." They were so shocked at this woman saying it, that she had orders from God, that they didn't know what to do. And she said she was utterly and totally surprised at her own audacity. She said the words just came out. She hadn't planned to say that, but she just, in that moment, she stood in truth and said, "I am not leaving. This is what I'm doing." And these young men were so shocked at her voice of authority that they put down their guns and left. And the nuns were safe. Now, the important bit is this. When she described the experience to me, and it was in her broken English and my terrible Indonesian, but when she described the experience, she said, "Live or die, it was the same." She said, in that moment, she was not clinging to life and she was not fearing death. So for her, in that moment, live or die, it was the same. So this non-clinging, not clinging to life, not fearing death, this standing in that authority, the standing in that authority, voice from the heavens, is the deathless. This is the deathless truth. And her words, of course, had extraordinary power. And the three nuns and the children were all saved. And she simply said, in recounting the story, she said, "God didn't want me to die then." So in other words, it just simply didn't happen then. So let's come back to our statement about the five spiritual faculties. So these five, when maintained in being and developed, merge in the deathless, reach to the deathless, and end in the deathless. And they are faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom or understanding. So the first one is faith. In the Dharma, faith doesn't mean blind belief. Another translation of the Pali sadha is confidence or trust. So what is meant by the Buddha in terms of faith is that we should not accept or reject anything because of some kind of oral transmission or because it's been written or because of some lineage or because someone wise said it or because it's written in books or because it's been thought out or because someone has a theory about something or because the teacher sounds competent, or we should not accept or reject something simply out of respect for a teacher. We should know what things are censured by the wise and which, if pursued, would lead to harm and suffering. So clearly, we listen, we see what, if pursued, leads to harm and suffering. And then, of course, we see what doesn't lead to harm and suffering. And so we need to see for ourselves. And in this way, we have trust and faith and confidence. And then we start to have the faith in the fact that there is freedom, there is liberation, because we begin to see for ourselves from our own direct experience. The second faculty is energy or virya. And this is the diligence that's required for the practice of meditation and to really inquire and see deeply into the nature of things. And that's what we're doing here in the retreat. We're putting energy in. And from the faith in the integrity of the practice, you see, naturally comes the energy as well. And with that energy can come, of course, joy. And then our practice is sweet in the beginning, sweet in the middle, and sweet in the end. So energy is required for this cultivation of the five mental powers. It is one of the powers, but if we really want to maintain them in our being, so we keep coming back to them. We see what's needed. And it's useful to just reflect and say, which of these five do I need to give more attention to? Am I lacking in any one of these five? Do I ignore one of these five faculties or five mental powers? So energy and diligence and right effort aspires to realization and, of course, reaches to, merges in, and ends in the deathless. So in other words, if we practice and practice these things, we will see and understand. The third of the faculties is mindfulness. And many of you, of course, have done courses and studied and practiced mindfulness. And it too aims for realization and liberation. And the application of our mindfulness allows us to see into our constructs of self, how we hold to our own identity, and how we can let go, how we can release some of those things that we grip and hold on to. So awakening involves this deconstruction of the self, the falling away of clinging to any kind of identity, the falling away of clinging to our desires, and the falling away of having fixed views and opinions. Birth and death has relevance only when we identify with the mind and body as I and my. mindfulness is actually much more than just being with. Sometimes it's misunderstood as just being with something you're doing. But it's actually much more than that. It's to be with the objects, the sensations, the feelings, the thoughts, the views, the ideas, the opinions, the difficulties. It's to be with it in a particular way, and this way is with the heart of non-grasping. This is the key. I can't say it enough times. And I know we can hear that intellectually, but it is actually by inwardly loosening our grip of clinging, by softening our tendency to hold, that we start to find some kind of release. So then we allow mindfulness to illuminate the moment. It really shines awareness onto the moment. And we welcome each moment. We be receptive, open. This is the way. So mindfulness is not mechanistic, or it's not an analytical approach. It's an approach of softness, my view, of sensitivity, of receptivity. And then we understand and know for ourselves the sweet light of awareness. The fourth of the spiritual faculties is concentration or samadhi. So samadhi, when maintained in being, cultivated and developed, it too merges in the deathless, reaches to the deathless, ends in the deathless. So to use Christopher's definition, maybe this is why he likes to talk so much. I used his definition. I'm teasing. Samadhi refers to the mind that is steady, focused, present, with calmness and mindfulness. Samadhi is a state of peace, equanimity, and contentment. And of course, the most famous way of developing samadhi is just what we're doing, mindfulness of breathing. But samadhi can also just rather naturally come in everyday events. And this brings me to yet another story of a dear friend of mine, Cass. And she said, I can only use the story if I say her name. So her name is Cass. And she's an absolute delight and a totally wonderful friend. And I've known her for many years. But she invited me to the birth of her son. I had actually been at the birth of her first child as well. And at this birth, I witnessed a really wonderful natural samadhi. She was at that stage of the labour, which, for those of you who perhaps don't know, is called transition. It's the stage where the baby is coming from the womb down the birth canal, and it's usually the stage where the woman says, I want out. I can't do this. I'm over it. I've had enough. Because the sensations are really intense at that time. And so she had reached that point, and she had some reluctance about continuing, but there's nothing to be done about that. So she suddenly realized what she needed to do. And so we had a kind of circular low stool that she could sit on. So she was sitting cross-legged, kind of cross-legged like this, on this stool that kind of had a hole there where the baby could be caught. It's a kind of strange stool, but anyway, she was sitting like that. And she just sat with incredible focus, and with each contraction, we could just see her go inward. And her whole body just transformed. It was extraordinary. And afterwards, her husband just grabbed me outside and said, did you see her? Did you see her? She looked like a Buddha. And then he realized he was saying his wife looked like a man. And so he said, no. She looked like a goddess. And I said, yes, I saw I saw, she was literally radiant, luminous almost, as she birthed this child. It was a wonderful and beautiful experience of a natural samadhi, of someone with incredible focus and concentration, and all that comes forth and shines forth from that. So, when there's samadhi, our Buddha nature shines. So, check it out. You don't have to have a baby, but check it out. And this brings me to the fifth of the powers of the mind, which is panya, wisdom, or understanding. And of course, we need to understand our experiences. Wisdom isn't something that we suddenly have or gain or acquire. It's an active process of bringing attention to and bringing all of these qualities of the heart and mind to our direct experience. So this is a really famous poem, but it says rather well what I'm talking about. And apparently it was written by a woman whose surname was Fry, and I don't even know whether we know her name, but the poem's called A Thousand Winds. And it was written on a brown paper bag, and the words just came to this woman. And when a British soldier died, he left this poem in an envelope for his parents and his friends, and his father read it on the BBC. And I find it's an incredible poem. And he says this, the poem says this: "Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I am a thousand winds that blow. I am the diamond glints on snow. I am the sunlight on ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn rain. When you awaken in the morning's hush, I am the swift uplifting rush of quiet birds in circled flight. I am the soft stars that shine at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die." And finally, another story to try to show the meaning of this talk, try to shed some light on this difficult theme and topic of the deathless. And this is another story about birth and death, actually. So please, on hearing it, if you're pregnant, and I know there's one, perhaps more than one woman in the hall, please don't go into terror. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. So a woman had given birth to a child, but she had given birth 3 or 4 months prematurely. And while the child, when the child was born, seemed to look normal, the doctors had told her that the child was unformed, the lungs were unformed, and there was not a possibility that the child would live for very long because of the lack of development of the lungs. And so those conditions didn't support the life of the child. However, the child lived for much longer than anybody had expected. The child lived for several hours. And so the mother held the child while he lived. And then, of course, after he died. And of course, the longer the child lived, the more she said she hoped for the miracle that the child would live. And then she said, along came a doctor and said to her, don't hope. This is really, really difficult. She said there she was, and every cell in her body wanted this child to live. Of course, she's the mother. And yet she knew, and the doctor was telling her, I'm very sorry, but this will not be possible. And then something extraordinary happened. She said, the child just took her finger and held it, just grasped her finger like that. So it's a little reflex that babies have, but the child grasped her finger, held it, and then died. And she said, in that moment of the touch of the child's finger on her hand on her finger, she said, she knew immediately that which was not bound to birth and death. She said, I can still feel that moment. It is timeless. It will never leave me. So she experienced in that moment a profound knowing that is not bound to birth and death. So the release from being caught up in her desire, the very natural desire that the baby would live, came in the form of just the touch. And she said, Radha, I can never lose this. This can never be lost. I can still feel it. I can feel it right now. Was wonderful, was extraordinary. So what she experienced is the recognition and the knowing of that which is unborn and undying, not caught in time, not about mother, not about son. And the knowing of this understanding is expressed as love. And she said, my love for him is undiminished, unchanged by whether he lived or died. This is love in its deepest sense. And this is the profound knowing that we can touch into. And the Buddha called it the unborn supreme security. Many of us, of course, look for security in this life, but we look for security in the changing. Security is found in the knowing of the unborn and undying. So in this beautiful touch of the child with the mother, there was the cessation of any clinging. All the desires ceased, the mental formations ceased, and there was just the preciousness of profound knowing. This is understanding. This is wisdom. This is the wisdom of the Buddha Dharma. This is the deathless teaching of the Buddha. And what the teachings are pointing to. So in a verse by the Buddha, he says, there is this beyond aging, this beyond death. This the unaging, undying state. This free from grieving, from all animosity, so from all unkindness, unobstructed, unhindered, free from all fear, not burning. So may each of us here live with a heart unobstructed, unhindered, and free from all fear. Let's just sit quietly together. May all beings cultivate and develop the 5 mental faculties, the 5 mental powers. May all beings realize the deathless truth. And may all beings live with an unobstructed heart. With a heart unhindered, heart of love. Thank you very much for listening. There's 15 minutes now where you can sit or recline as you wish, or if you wish, do walking meditation.